gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution.
This is the Quality News Network. The Republican-led Senate Armed Services Committee has passed legislation to protect the civil rights of terror suspects on trial. Committee Chairman John Warner and three other Republicans joined Democrats in the 15-9 vote. Earlier, President Bush lobbied on Capitol Hill to push for his own version of the bill. It calls for part of the Geneva Conventions to be reinterpreted so that terror suspects can undergo tougher interrogations. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell joined prominent Republicans and top U.S. generals in criticizing that plan. In Baghdad today, police found the bodies of more than 30 men who'd been tortured and shot to death. The U.S.-led coalition also reportedly killed a senior member of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and captured another. Two U.S. soldiers were killed in a suicide car bombing in the western outskirts of Baghdad today. Two others were killed in the Baghdad area, one in gunfire, the other in a roadside bombing. Another U.S. soldier was reportedly killed yesterday near Mosul. The Army is releasing a new version of its America's Army video game, America's Army Real Heroes, in an effort to get more recruits. It features soldiers who resemble eight actual soldiers who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Army spends about $2.5 million in taxpayers' money each year on the game. The UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency says a U.S. congressional report on Iran's uranium enrichment program is outrageous and dishonest. The agency says the report describes Iran's nuclear activity as being far more advanced than it actually is, and that Washington knows it's not as far along as it's being described. In Washington, a two-year-old FCC study that indicates large media conglomerates hurt local news coverage was ordered destroyed. The Associated Press reports California Senator Barbara Boxer received a copy of the report and is asking the FCC chairman for an explanation. In Florida, a 623-foot cargo ship has hit a reef and run aground in Port Everglades. The freighter is carrying cement from Sweden. In Montana, the 200,000-acre fire is now 80% contained, but another fire is still burning out of control about 15 miles from Livingston. Residents have been warned they may need to evacuate. And in Southern California, firefighters have managed to prevent a fire from jumping Interstate 5. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Honda and a research institute have developed a way to use discarded plant material to make fuel. They say they can use materials such as waste wood, rice straw, and leaves to produce ethanol. NASA studies show that winter sea ice in the Arctic is now melting at a much faster rate. Researchers say it's a sure sign of global warming that also threatens the ocean's ecosystem. The United Auto Workers says Ford will offer buyouts to about 75,000 of its unionized employees. It's part of an effort to cut costs after slumping sales of its vehicles. The Detroit News reports that Ford Motors may lose $6 billion this year. Restructuring costs could raise that total to $9 billion. GE is selling a majority stake in its advanced materials unit to a private investment group. Expected proceeds of $2 billion will be used to restructure GE's industrial business. Dell Computers says desktop computers will start being produced at its new facility in India by mid-2007. It's Dell's first investment in an India-based manufacturing facility. August retail sales were up only 0.2%. That's the weakest performance since June. Light sweet crude settled today at $63.30. Gold was $583.20 an ounce. Silver, $10.83. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow is down 16 points, NASDAQ up 1, S&P 500 down 2. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. So it's Thursday, and it's dirty Republicans, corrupt Republicans, racist Republicans, filthy Republicans, no good Republicans. Republicans that only a mother could love. I've got examples of all of them this evening, I assure you. Let's start, because I got myself in a little bit of trouble some months back when the immigration debate was being used to try to divide the progressive community, and I tried to deliver, not the progressive community, you know, Democrats in general. I tried to provide the sure path by pointing out that the whole thing was a scam, that the whole thing was just a con job, that the two sides of the so-called immigration debate on the, you know, on the Republican side of things were either racists or, the racists want to, we need to run them out of here. And then there were the, there was the ownership society part of the Republican party. Well, we do if we can't pay construction workers $2.50 an hour. How will we afford that 14th Corvette and the third McMansion? How will we do that? And I just tried to point out, but in case, this is where we start tonight. Just in case there was anybody out there that had any lingering doubts about what the anti-immigrant crowd is really, really all about, I offer you this. Dateline is Columbia, South Carolina. This is from Alexander Zaychik at the Southern Poverty Law Center. He writes, for a college football game day, the South Carolina State Museum in downtown Columbia was a busy place on the afternoon of Saturday, September 9th. On the ground floor, a United States Army brass band commemorated the victims of 9/11. One level up, not far from the museum's permanent Confederate Army exhibit, the state chapter of the League of the South. Oh, dear God, go look it up. You'll figure it out. The League of the South. It's the Code of the Hills. The League of the South. A neo-Confederate hate group hosted a barbecue in honor of, wait for it, Colorado Congressman Tom Tancredo, head of the House Immigration Reform Caucus and likely contestant in the 2008 GOP presidential primary. Talk about out of the closet. Proceeds from the $15 a plate fundraiser went to Americans Have Had Enough! ! A South Carolina-based nonprofit coalition for which Tancredo serves as honorary chairman. Are there any questions left? Any at all? Do we finally understand that all these monsters patrolling the border, whether it's the minute men down on the border, or whether it is the Republican National Committee operatives in Michigan, Texas, and Pennsylvania hosting catch-an-illegal-immigrant games, or whether it's Tom Tancredo, America's number one Klansman. Is there any doubt left of what these people really are? While Tancredo's hardline deport 'em all stance on immigration has made him a favorite politician of white supremacists, this marked the first time, Alexander Zaychik writes, the first time that the congressman has appeared at a hate group event. Dressed casually in a yellow T-shirt to match the yellow stripe down his back, Tancredo addressed the standing room audience of 200 to 250. That's 200 and 200 to 250 on a daggum game day in Columbia, South Carolina, where they are proud to announce nobody licks our cocks. South Carolina Gamecocks. They're serious about their football. They are Southeastern Conference football people, and you don't just pull them away on game day unless you got some serious, real, live, honest-to-goodness, hardcore racism to pass around at the League of the South. And you got weirdo Tom Tancredo come all the way from Colorado on his racist Mexican-hating express. Because, after all, Tancredo is, I believe it's either a Pequot or an Iroquois name. Because everybody knows that the Tancredos have been here on the North American continent since well before any white Europeans set foot here. It was, in fact, Chief Tom Tancredo. It was Chief Tancredo. It was Chief Tancredo who sent Hiawatha off on one of his missions, wasn't it? No, of course not. No, of course not. Tom Tancredo's immigrant forebears were as loathed as any other immigrant in this country because, you know, that's... What? It's one of the rites of passage. When you first get here, you get hated for a generation or so, while people who were here before you and they're afraid that you're going to do something or take something from... They're coming for our toilets. They hate the first generation. And then the second generation and third generation come along and say, we're proud Americans. I'm third generation American. Well, my parents came through Ellis Island, blah, 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 blah. And what in God's name are we going to do about the Mexicans? Apparently that's where Tom Tancredo is. Dressed casually in a yellow T-shirt, Tancredo addressed the standing room audience of 200 to 250. From behind a... Just get the mental picture here. From behind a podium draped in a Confederate battle flag, to the congressman's right, a portrait of Robert E. Lee peered out at the crowd of Minutemen activists, local politicians, and red-shirted members of League of the South, and the sons of Confederate veterans. The Confederate trappings of the event found a mismatch in Tancredo's standard nativist polemic, which stayed clear of references to Southern heritage or direct plaudits for the League of the South, a Southern white nationalist organization dedicated to, quote, Southern independence, complete, full, and total. The afternoon's proceedings were opened by Garland McCoy, board member of the Americans Have Had Enough. McCoy, a veteran conservative activist and treasurer of the telecom industry front group Progress and Freedom Foundation, declared, quote, he has not been so excited by a politician in a long time. Tom Tancredo can go all the way, he said. Oh, dear, I'm not going to touch it. Tom Tancredo can go all the way. Most in the crowd appeared to agree. I brought my son here today to meet the next president of the United States. One man told Tancredo during the question. So, at least, you know, the theme, you know, what have we been saying? It's going to get uglier, it's going to get uglier. It is going to get uglier and uglier and uglier the nearer we get to November and the nearer, frankly, that we get to 2008. Because the Republicans in Congress, they've got to work on staying in power right now. Tom Tancredo will probably, I haven't read of any credible opposition to him. He probably lives somewhere that credible opposition to Tom Tancredo is like credible opposition to air. You know, one of those rural areas where, well, you know, I'm concerned that Al-Qaeda may infiltrate the Mexican community, and the next thing you know, they're going to be planting bombs in our toilets. I mean, there are parts of America that are like that, and we just kind of have to deal with it. It's our job to educate, and if we cannot educate, it is our job to outvote them, outnumber them, make them irrelevant, And barring that, it's also our job from time to time when we catch them out to point at them and laugh. Look, son, look, there goes a racist. At the close of Tancredo's speech, several men in Confederate-themed clothing stood up and bellowed the first notes of Dixie. They were soon joined by voices from throughout the large hall, which was now entirely on its feet. Tancredo, a second-generation Italian-American from Denver, what did I tell you? Appeared confused by the sudden burst of strange song. He quickly worked his way toward the exit with his staff. Fellas, let's leave before they light the cross, okay? I knew I was taking their money, and I certainly wanted to whoop them up a little bit and get them to hate the Mexicans a little bit more. But if they're gonna fire up a couple of crosses, we don't need that this early in the campaign. But they're all of the same cloth. They're the same gangs. Concerned conservative citizens, the CCC, the LOS, Reform Against Mexicans, it's all the same bunch. It is all the same bunch. And of course, you know, all these poor South Carolinians, you know, how many of them have family members who have lost their jobs because they can't go to work anymore in a state that's so right to work that they don't even pay living wages anymore, even in what used to be considered good wage positions. Suckers! There's one way to end it, South Carolina. Throw the damn Republicans out. Get yourself some decent government. Well, but then we wouldn't be conservative no more. Well, you know, you can be conservative and starve to death, or you can be conservative and starve to death, would you? Okay, cool. Let's take a break. Your phone calls, you know this, they're always welcome. This is, in fact, Conversation Radio. And I'm Bob Kincaid. The number is 877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, You're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Yeah, let's do. Let's time warp back to somewhere around November 2000. And, we can't.
It's just a jump to the left.
Lord, I wish we could tell Sherman to set the Wayback Machine for unscrew America, don't you? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head on a Thursday evening. We jump across the pond now. Our good friend Andy calls in from Wales. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
It has been. I was just thinking about you.
Well, things worked against us, you know. I missed a Friday, and then there was no opportunity because you were doing interviews, and then you were out, and then you were doing interviews, and then you were out again. Yeah. It's all good. It worked anyway. So, what to talk about? There are so many things.
Oh, we're kind of loaded. We're loaded. We're loaded for bear, buffalo, and all sorts of other critters.
Well, I'm gonna perform my duties as reporter briefly.
Do please.
BBC show The Path to 9/11.
Yes.
But they've requested that since we all have objections to it, since there's a controversy, and I asked them these questions, they requested that I read out their statement on the air if I could.
Hmm.
Okay. Right. This is the email I got from a guy called Paul.
Okay.
He was quite a nice guy. Right. A statement at the beginning of the A Path to 9/11 is clear about sources and methods used. It said, and we quote, "The following movie is a dramatization that is drawn from a variety of sources, including the 9/11 Commission report and other published material, and from personal interview. The movie is not a documentary. For dramatic and narrative purposes, the movie contains fictionalized scenes, composite and representative characters and dialogue, as well as time compression." Right, so that's their official statement. I then pointed out that the authors of the 9/11 Commission report objected very strongly to the entire thing, because they said, it's mostly lies.
Yeah, well.
And he didn't have anything to say about that. So the BBC is doing the work of George Bush's propaganda machine at the moment for that.
Well, did you know, Andy, that they've also put out a story saying, gee, we didn't know it was put together by a right-wing Christian fundamentalist?
Yeah. When I pointed out that the person who wrote it was a right-wing Christian fundamentalist friend of Rush Limbaugh's, the guy went, what?
That must have gone over lovely.
Yeah, he covered himself just, but I'm sure he was going to go, what? It's quite annoying, and I will chase them up on it, but at least BBC Two aren't doing any of that. They're actually telling the truth about the whole 9/11 thing, which is quite handy.
Well, this David Cunningham guy that did the stinking little movie, Andy, he was in the UK last month.
I know.
He addressed a conference in England that was organized by Youth with a Mission, which is a fundy evangelical organization founded by his father.
Yeah.
This was at Harpenden in Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
And it was all about the making of the film. Yeah, Hertfordshire, sorry.
But that organization is basically the same as any of your nutty organizations.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Youth with a Mission, and I mean, I'm sure there's no connection or anything except for the fact that it goes to prove that, or it sort of points out the similarities between weirdo so-called Christian fundamentalists and weirdo so-called Muslim fundamentalists. This is the Youth with a Mission. That's the YWAM. Now, shortly after 9/11, we let out of the country something called WAMI, which was the World Association of Muslim Youth, who had been funneling money to the terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's kismet. Maybe it's just synchronicity or something. But you know.
Well, I think it's the sort of people who tend to become fundamentalists of any religion have a very small imagination. Aren't very interesting when they come up with acronyms.
It's the difference between tastes great and less filling.
Yeah. These people are all nuts. You know, what do you expect?
So tell me a little bit about what went down in the last week or so with your prime minister. It looks like it's getting a little ugly, Andy.
It is. It's getting very ugly. Basically, what I seem to have discovered that happened is Gordon Brown has been using proxies to test the waters, and it's all just gone mad. He wasn't expecting this result at all, I don't think. I think he was trying to apply a little pressure through a third party to just remind Tony to come up with a date, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
A date not so close as, you know, right, so Gordon takes the blame for Iraq, but far enough away from the next election so that he can establish himself prime minister and actually get re-elected. Now, as soon as that happened, all the people who were like pro-Tony Blair basically went nuts, and there was like a media feeding frenzy on, is he going to announce he's going? Is he not going to announce he's going? Somebody's going to say he's going. And so Tony Blair, who'd hoped to just stay out of it, was drawn into it, and once he got drawn into it, there was no way of him, you know, getting away without naming a date. So what he's managed to do is push it off until the 18th of this month, I think, when there's a conference going on,
mm-hmm.
and he's apparently got to deliver the date on the 18th. I mean, nobody said that has to happen, but, you know, if it doesn't, I can't really see it all working out for him.
I mean, could it get ugly enough to force a no confidence?
Well, yes, but that would be... I think that would be more difficult to do in our Labour Party than it would be to do in either of your Republican or Democratic Party. Because he's still got the support of quite a few sort of powerful people within the party and stuff, and there's quite a lot of people who just don't want to rock the boat at the moment because they can see if it goes badly wrong, then Labour are out at the next election. So it's all very, very tense. I mean, there's lots of people in Labour who really just would rather this had not happened. There's a lot of people who want Tony Blair to have already announced because, that, you know, as soon as he announces it, all goes away.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Because
he's literally going to carry the sins on his own shoulders, right?
Yeah, well, basically, yeah. I mean, nobody else is going to take responsibility for anything that's happened since he took office because there's been nothing good. You know, I mean, everybody says this about Britain is well, the Labour Party have delivered a really great economy, and so instantly everyone goes, oh, Gordon Brown did that. He's the Chancellor. He's the guy with the hands on the purse strings. And after that, nobody can think of much good to say. The health service is getting worse, and there's been yet another computer disaster in the civil service. I don't know if you know this, but Britain's like famous for computer systems that don't work.
is this like my buddy's MG, where he says if there's no oil on the floor, there's no oil in the car?
Well, yeah, something like that. I mean, we've never ever achieved what we set out to achieve when it comes to IT. I mean, I worked for the Foreign Office for a while. And this was in 96, 97 area. And they used Oracle. Do you know what Oracle is, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Does anybody under the age of 30, aside from me, know what Oracle is? Probably not. I mean, this is so old that it makes DOS look advanced. And it was running a system that was running Oracle with a DOS on top of Oracle and a Windows on top of DOS. And that was the Foreign Office computers. They've recently done a computer system for the health service, and doctors are saying, well, none of this is what we wanted, and we don't use it anyway, and so it's simply not being used. It was a health service computer system that...
Can't even play Pong on it, huh?
No. I mean, basically, you're supposed to be able to go into any doctor or any hospital in the country and just hand over your name and address, and they were going to be able to pull up your entire medical history just there and then. And so anybody anywhere could treat you for whatever, yeah? And that sounds great, except they didn't consult with anybody in the NHS about how it would work or what they needed. And so it just doesn't do anything. It doesn't work for anyone. All the files are centrally held. So as soon as someone decides to hack in, it's all compromised. It's just ridiculous, and it costs, I don't know, $8 or $9 billion more than it should have already, and it's still not finished.
Oh, my God. It's kind of interesting, though, because we've got this sort of incestuous thing that goes back and forth across the Atlantic, Andy, mm-hmm. where, you know, we'll try stuff here and it migrates to you, or you'll try stuff there, it migrates to us. I've heard in the last year, year and a half, 2 years, dear leader on a number of occasions say, we need a computer system that'll manage all the medical records in America so any doctor can look at and find any patient at any time.
Yeah.
So, you know, coming soon to a healthcare system near you, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America.
Well, I mean, it was an American company that managed to buy it, as in buy the contract, buy, I don't know, offering Valera, I don't know, place on the board when he retires, probably. But, you know, it was basically a no-bid contract. And, of course, once they've managed to sell it to Britain, they can turn around and sell it to the States, because nobody will actually see the program in action. What they'll see is what the people who are selling you the program want you to see. So these people who have bought the idea in the health service over there, you don't have a health service, but you know what I mean, they'll never have seen it going. They won't understand anything about it. They'll just go, oh, it's another opportunity to hand a load of money to another American corporation. My buddy's on the board of that one. But yeah, coming soon. But I mean, that's Tony Blair's problem. Everything he's done has been about improving either his own image or, you know, just setting it up for him and his buddies at the top for later on.
Well, is there any word out there? Is it formalized yet? The minute he steps down, does he get his little seat on the board of the Carlyle Group, Andy?
Well, that's what I mean. The Carlyle Group. I mean, he has that seat. I don't know if it's going to be straight away. It probably won't be. They're sensible enough to leave it for a while until Tony Blair's dropped off the political radar. Do you know what I mean? But call it 3 or 4 or 5 years afterwards. He'll do a few CEO jobs. He'll do some talking tours around the US for, you know, 100,000 a shot. He'll be okay. And then after 5 or 6 years, possibly, maybe 10 years even, John Major will retire and the English seat on the board will become available and he'll have it. You know, I mean, these people have already arranged a whole load of things in Britain that are bad for us.
Well, in all of this shifting about and not taking of blame, and everything gets washed snowy clean when Tony steps aside and all of that, I know you do, and I can't speak, you know, I can probably speak with some degree of certainty on our other listeners in the UK. You know, you guys actually care about what happens to your soldiers.
Yeah.
Is there any talk? What happens to Basra? What happens in Afghanistan, Andy?
Well, at the moment, what's happening in Afghanistan is our soldiers and some Canadians that are fighting alongside them are getting cut off and slaughtered. Well, slaughtered might be a bit strong. Cut off and slowly chopped to pieces.
The outcome remains the same, though, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we're not getting the sort of mass casualties of the Somme, but we're losing, you know, one or two men a day. Sometimes we've got a whole day without someone dying in Afghanistan. Isn't that great? You know, every so often something like the plane crash that the Nimrod happens and there's another 14 dead. I mean, what's happening is that nobody really cares about Afghanistan anymore, and our soldiers have been abandoned there.
Is it just forgotten?
Basra. Well, I mean, in Basra, at least they're fairly safe for the time being, because they've got this agreement. We don't leave our bases, and you don't attack us. Kind of like the agreement Pakistan has with Waziristan.
Yeah, surprising, huh?
Yeah, so, I mean...
But, of course, you know, the Pakistan pullout and everything, that just makes life worse for all the so-called coalition forces in Afghanistan.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the British are in Helmand province, and the Canadians are next door to them. I can't remember the name of that province. But both of those border Waziristan in the south.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Taliban, I mean, apparently they killed like 1,000 Taliban fighters in one night of action about 2 weeks ago who were attacking a British fort, and they very, very nearly ran out of ammo. Apparently, some of the places that they have to boil clean stream water because they're not getting supplies of water, let alone food. you know, these are supposed to be some of the finest fighting forces in the world, and we can't even supply them with food. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know this is turning into something out of Rudyard Kipling, Andy.
Well, yeah, indeed. We've had an Afghan before, and there were like 76,000 people slaughtered.
Yeah, you've. I mean, it
actually happened to the British Empire.
I know. That's what I'm saying. The United States, we've not done this before. You know, we did it by proxy against the Soviets, but you guys. You've been down this road.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, I'm amazed that the Soviets bothered, having seen what happened to the British. I mean, first of all, who wants Afghanistan? I mean, the Afghans, but nobody else. It's not really worth much. And the whole poppy thing was just a ridiculous idea. Oh, Afghanistan produces lots of poppy. Well, you know what I reckon? We should buy all the opium off them from our government, and then we should turn it into morphine.
Yeah, and use it in hospitals?
Yeah.
Instead of making the synthetic stuff?
We could even turn it into that hillbilly heroin that Russia's so fond of. Why isn't he pro this idea?
Well, that's the thing about the hillbilly heroin is it's got a time release coating around it, so you can chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor, Andy. And suddenly it doesn't just keep your pain down, you know, consistently through the course of 8 or 10 hours. It's one big rush of woo happy. And that's what Rush was, you know. That's what Rush was liking about it. But no, this is just a series of
disaster.
Stupidity and disaster and visionlessness.
Well, someone I respect a lot, Jimmy Carter, said something on Newsnight tonight that was very interesting. That's President Jimmy Carter, not mm-hmm. the crazy English guy over here that I'm talking about. And he said that he was intensely worried by the United Kingdom's subservient position towards the United States. And he said that historically the United Kingdom has always been the sort of hand of reason that comes across the Atlantic and slaps the American president across the face and goes, shut up and listen, do this. And the president doesn't, you know, start World War III or, you know, whatever it needs to be done at the time. And he says that it's unfortunate that Tony Blair has continually said, oh, we have this influence behind the scenes, when in fact that's just not true. Because everything the US wants to do, the United States does, and everything it wants to do, the United Kingdom goes, yes, okay, we approve, this is a good idea, and anybody else.
Well, at the summit, when Tony had to reach over and turn off Dear Leader's microphone, we really learned his real function in life, didn't we?
Yeah, cover George's out.
You know, hey, George, get the roll out of your mouth before you talk. You know, George went to the American equivalent of highfalutin boarding schools. You know, I guess it's no Eton, but you know, you would have thought.
Yeah, but we don't have fraternities in our boarding schools, so I think there's a big cultural difference right there, and it explains a lot between our politicians and your politicians.
Yeah, but that explains the branding with the hot wires and stuff. But
yeah.
Then again, you've got your gentlemen's clubs, so.
Well, gentlemen's clubs are a bit bizarre. They're a holdover of the aristocracy, really. And, yeah, I mean, they weren't so much no women as no riffraff.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, none of those people.
Hmm?
None of those people.
You know, anyone who's worth less than X thousand guineas a year, I guess, was the original idea.
Right, you can't come in.
Unless
if you can't get bespoke suits on Savile Row, you can't join.
Yeah, yeah, that's basically it. But I mean, nowadays they're multi-sex and everything. The European Union sorts of that.
But do you think that if Tony Blair steps away from the from number 10 Downing Street, Andy, do you think that there might rise up a hue and cry to bring the troops home? Period. End of sentence.
Well, the problem is it could go a couple of ways. It depends, because it's not a shoe-in. Gordon Brown is not guaranteed to take control, because we don't have a vice president sort of idea. The Labour Party have to have an election. Now, it might just be that nobody else stands, but we've already had a couple of people say they probably will stand. So there's going to be an election. Effectively, if you're a member of a union or you're a member of the Labour Party or a couple of other sort of people are allowed to vote, and they will select the new Prime Minister because they're selecting the new leaders of the Labour Party, which is a bit odd, really. So basically it means that anyone in the Labour Party who gets enough votes can be the Prime Minister, and there's quite a few different candidates, and we've got to remember the Labour Party is actually very left-leaning. It's only the people that manage to take over that aren't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few leftist candidates. A guy to look out for, Alan Johnson, he could be the next Prime Minister quite easily, because, I mean, he's got the left-wing credentials, you know, born in a terrorist poor sink estate type of area, and, you know, bread and dripping for breakfast, dinner and tea if you got all three meals for most of his life, and then, yeah, he's made himself good and all that. So he's got a big following amongst the sort of union crowd. And there's a couple of others that might appeal to the sort of the more middle-class union members and stuff like that. But it's by no means certain Gordon Brown will take over, and if that happens, then I don't know what will happen, frankly, because the most of the left-wingers will not want to be associated with America in any way at all.
Yeah.
And if they want to win the next election, they're probably going to have to bring the troops home. So, yeah, if a left-winger gets in, there's a good chance the troops will be brought home.
Now, there is not a snowball's chance in hell of the Tories taking control, is there?
Well, the only thing that could cause that is if there was some kind of disaster over the leadership election, and then there was some sort of election, general election called. And, well, it's possible the Tories would win, but it's unlikely. What's more likely is a hung parliament, and then it'd be up to the Liberal Democrats whether to be cooperative with Labour or the Tories. Or even the Liberal Democrats could possibly go with all the independents and the Green Party and people like that and form a totally separate coalition government. But that's really, really unlikely. I mean, you know, you'd have to have, like, a disaster inside the Labour Party election, like blatant vote rigging or, you know, something really, really disastrous. And they normally have fairly clean.
And you still vote like normal people, so hard.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't. There are cases of vote rigging has happened in the last general election. It was all Labour that did it, but it was in areas where postal votes were allowed, which you're allowed to use postal votes pretty much anywhere, but only certain people are generally allowed to use postal votes, like the military and stuff like that, because they're obviously might not be there when they're on service. But yeah, it was a couple of like Labour councillors. I think Labour managed to push it out somewhere or in a couple of places, but a couple of Labour councillors.
Well, I wonder, Andy, if the UK can somehow or another shine a light, provide some direction.
Well, hopefully.
Tell America, you know, these weird little people that follow George Bush, tell them that their day is done, their race is over, their sun is set, and the rest of the world's going in a different direction, and we can either follow or get out of the way.
Yeah, we need a Churchill, quite honestly, don't we?
Yeah, we need a leader somewhere.
Well, that's what I mean. We need somebody who can literally just sort of stand up to the United States, just ignore the president, talk right past him to the Congress and to the people.
Now, it's going to be quite exciting tomorrow evening here on the Horn, Andy. Bruce Birch is going to be interviewing Rocky Anderson, the mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah. I don't know if you saw his address a couple of weeks ago, but it was the strongest anti-war, anti-Republican, anti-conservative message that I have heard delivered probably in years.
Well, I didn't hear the whole thing. I saw a clip of it on Cook the Liars or something like that. So yeah, I got a clip of it on my computer.
Well, he delivered a blistering, and he'll be joining Bruce tomorrow evening. So, you know, we talk about needing leaders. That guy has leaders stamped all over him. It's a shame.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you need to get these people and you need to get them out, their message out. And not only that, you have to keep them alive.
That's true.
Because
I wish I thought you were over the top in saying that, but you're not.
At all. Look at the number of people who threatened the system and have disappeared for it. Kennedy, okay, first of all. And
John, Bobby, Martin.
Yeah.
You know, and like I mentioned last night, Paul Wellstone.
Yeah.
And now you've got the college Republicans running around Michigan playing fun with guns. That's the name of the game. And they want to shoot cardboard cutouts of Democratic political leaders with paintballs.
Yeah.
That's where we are in late 2006.
Well, you should just come up with a Democratic game, fun with guns, where you go around and shoot people who are shooting the paintball shots at the Democratic cutouts with paintball.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. If we do that, we wind up in the head-on wing of Guantanamo Bay Prison.
Well, you know, unless we win, we're already heading there, Bob. So what's there to lose?
There's an element of sad truth in what you say, Andy.
Well, look, you know, like everything, they're forcing it on us. We're not forcing the current state of affairs on the Republicans. They're forcing it on us. We're not the ones that force revolutions on people. It's always the right wing. It's always the ones who are out after their own interests. And that, you know, that's the sort of people that are in the Republican Party and support it.
Well, I just can't understand the distinction. I really can't, because if you're shooting life-size cutouts of Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Howard Dean, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Al Gore, You're doing it to all of these people, and yet, can you imagine? Well, I mean, do you remember?
Well, I reckon you should do. You should get a load of life-size boards cut out of Republican candidates that aren't on the TV much, and then just put Democrat underneath it and leave them on street corners. Or just have a fake in a little Democratic pin, yeah,
mm-hmm.
on the lapel of the cutout, and just leave them in the same city. And then they'll end up shooting the in Republican, and then it won't mean anything.
take away the victory that way.
Yeah, why not? All it'd take is three or four cutouts, you know, duplicates of three or four little-known Republicans that are sort of youngish-looking, because most Republicans are all fat and wrinkly, aren't they? But
Doughy, don't forget Doughy.
Oh, God, Doughy. Well, you know, Dick Cheney has that look of, like, if anybody sucked the life force out of people to stay alive, I'd say it's Dick Cheney. You know, in those weird, like, otherworldly programs, you know, like whatever you call it, I can't remember.
Star Trek.
Yeah, well, Star Trek, that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, the Star Trek salt monster that has the suction cups on its hand and pulls all this. Yeah, Cheney. Shapeshifter, sure.
That's precious.
No, you're right.
He has that bizarre look of death about him.
Well, and, you know, and yesterday with the Air Force General coming out and saying he wants to try the microwave disabling crowd control devices on Americans before we go start torturing the rest of the world with it. And I'm thinking, you know, what if it happens near a Dick Cheney appearance in the pacemaker and the automatic defibrillator just goes, and he's like, oh, I'm dead again, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How can you have someone who's so close to death as your vice president anyway?
Oh, I think I don't think he's close to it. I think he's kin to it.
Well, you know, when I say close to it, I mean...
No, I mean, he goes down... He sleeps in a box with Wyoming soil under the White House or under the Naval Observatory every night. I mean, he's got his own Renfield, Andy. Yes, Master, let me bring you some worms.
Ew. An eagle, yeah.
That's Igor.
Yeah.
Andy, good talking to you.
Yeah, well, I will not be calling tomorrow night because I have to go and do stuff to do with music and stuff.
Well, rock on then.
On that tip, I'm going to have to see if we can set you up with a guy called Mos Def.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, I've heard some of his stuff, and it's really quite good and political. So we'll see if we can arrange something with him.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
It'd be quite good having some dude who raps talking to some southern dude who probably doesn't know anything about rap at all.
You'd be surprised what I know.
Yeah.
All right, take care, Andy.
You too, man.
Bye.
Bye, mate.
Sounds like it's going to be a fun time in Cardiff tomorrow night. If Andy's out there spinning the wax, as we used to say in the biz. It's about, 13 minutes before the hour. Should we take a break, Agnes? No? No break? Okay. I only do what... I'm only here for the free food. If you want to get in on this, you're welcome to. I'm in a silly mood tonight. Help me. 877-443-2366 is the phone number. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you didn't listen to my last show, here's what you missed. He knew enough to not go under oath because he knew enough that could have gotten him into trouble. Instead, he had an interview with the 9/11 Commission. They were stonewalling the 9/11 Commission. Why? Why would they do that? Why wouldn't they be up front and talk about exactly what happened? Why? Because they had something to hide. Now you tell me what you think it might be. you tell me what you think they might have had to hide. Only someone who has something to hide will try to avoid talking, right? Only someone who has something to hide will try to keep from being sworn in under oath. 3,000 people dead, and he couldn't bring himself to lay his hand on the freaking Bible and have himself sworn in to give a sworn deposition. Thugs, I tell you. Complete thugs.
Tune into my show 5 to 7 Eastern on the Head On Radio Network and radiopower.org.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free, and it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hateful little racist Tom Tancredo. Going to visit the League of the South. The League of the South. I have been alerted by a sharp and paying attention kind of listener to the horn. I have been alerted that you really do just want to go and have a look at the South Carolina League of the South website, and it's worth it because, well, just listen. This is the crappy little speaker on the other computer. We don't have it wired through the board, but I think you'll pick this up. Yeah, high-class website, that. Dadgum, where's the part where you turn the stupid little ringtone off? Ah, oh, this is awful. This is the South Carolina League of the South website. And the, oh, my, go have a look for yourself. Let's see, what is it? If you go to dixienet.org. Dixienet.org is the League of the South, and then state chapters. You'll have to scroll down. You'll find out interesting things like the fact that there is a League of the South chapter in Idaho. League of South Idaho, I guess. Here's a League of the South chapter in Oklahoma. These goobers. These hateful, you know, and it's not just, we run a risk when we talk about racists like this by just thinking of them as goobers. But they are. We seek to advance the cultural, social, economic, and political well-being and independence of the Southern people by all honorable means. Well, not all Southern people, if you get right down to it, huh? Oh, how I love my native soil. Oh, how I love the stupidity that lives on it. Oh, God. And see, this is nothing new. This is historical. This is cultural. But can you imagine? Oh, what would you give to have videotape of Tom Tancredo like they had videotape of George Allen? What would you give to have videotape of Tom Tancredo when they start whistling Dixie, him in his yellow T-shirt? Fellas, I think it's time to get out. It's getting a little weird. Well, they're just going to start passing the bourbon bottle around in a minute. Tom, you'll be just fine till they figure out that you're second-generation immigrant. Then it's not going to be so good for you. Now, go have a look. You'll enjoy yourself. Oh, and by the way, something for perhaps greater examination in the coming hour. And I'm not going to give it any more life than it deserves, but you know how that stupid little movie that ran earlier this week, you know how it said it had those, well, you know, we've got Osama surrounded, but we can't shoot at him because Bill's busy with Monica right now. We can't shoot Osama because Bill's busy staining the blue dress. That whole bunch of bug spray.
Yes, it is.
Well, it turns out where the Bush administration is concerned, that there is an actual, you know, not made up version of that event. No. Well, okay, Tora Bora, you know, where they had Osama surrounded in the mountains, and George said, it wasn't George. It was probably Dick or Wolfie or Bolton or one of those other creepy people. Said, you know, let him go, man. If we catch him, well, the fun's over. What's going to happen to the Halliburton stock if we catch, you know, if... You see? Well, there is, beyond Tora Bora, there is a real live, really weird kind of little story out there about literally having them in our sights. It happened. There is a photograph. There's photographic evidence. We had people who liked to kill Americans in our sights and did nothing. That would be nothing. Not a damn thing about it. I'll share it with you when we come up in the after the top of the hour news. You're welcome to chime in. I'm interested in your thoughts. Like I said, this is conversation radio. If you're online, please stick around. We'll come back after the news. Go right to it. 877-443-2366 is the phone number. Email flies right into bob@headonradio.com. I look forward to hearing from you. I look forward to getting back from the news. Let's see what these big old overgrown boys and girls running the planet, mismanaging lives, let's just see what they're up to today. You know, our betters. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Oh.
This is the Quality News Network. A Republican-led committee passed legislation today to protect the civil rights of terror suspects on trial. Committee Chairman John Warner and three other Republicans joined Democrats in helping to pass the bill. Earlier, President Bush lobbied on Capitol Hill to push for his own version of the bill. It calls for a reinterpretation of the Geneva Conventions that would allow for tougher interrogations of terror suspects at military tribunals. The UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency is accusing U.S. politicians of exaggerating how far along Iran is on its uranium enrichment program. The agency's director says the House Intelligence Committee made it appear Iran can produce weapons-grade uranium faster than the available evidence suggests. In and around Baghdad, four U.S. soldiers were killed today. Also, police found the bodies of more than 30 men who'd been tortured and shot to death. The bodies of nearly 100 people who were killed by death squads have been found in the last 24 hours. At Guantanamo Bay, two detainees have been released and sent back to Kuwait. About 455 men are held at Guantanamo. U.S. authorities say about 130 of them are eligible for release or transfer. Poland is the only country so far to agree to send more troops to Afghanistan. However, they won't be deployed until February. That pledge comes after NATO's top commander issued an appeal for reinforcements. At the UN, South Korea's foreign minister has won another unofficial poll to replace Kofi Annan as Secretary General. Member nations have agreed the next UN chief will come from an Asian country and an election will be held at the end of the year. On Capitol Hill, the House approved a bill to erect a 700-mile-long fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. California Representative Ed Roy said, quote, "We're now facing infiltration by members of terrorist organizations like Hezbollah," end quote. Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate is expected to pass a port security bill this week. It would require that background checks for port workers be completed within a certain time frame and expand a program to screen for dirty bombs. It would also authorize millions of dollars to beef up anti-terrorism efforts. In Southern California, a wind change has helped firefighters to keep the day fire from jumping Interstate 5. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business and science news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
In Russia, a prominent banker who led the fight against money laundering has been assassinated. He was ambushed last night. No arrests have been made. NASA studies show that winter sea ice in the Arctic is now melting at a much faster rate. Researchers say it's a sign of global warming and threatens the ocean's ecosystem. The Atlantis crew has fixed a problem with solar wings that were added to the space station earlier this week. The third and final spacewalk will take place tomorrow. The United Auto Workers says Ford will offer buyouts to about 75,000 of its unionized employees. It's part of an effort to cut costs amid slumping sales of its vehicles. The International Monetary Fund says the U.S. economy will probably cool next year, while the world economy heads for its biggest expansion in 30 years. But the IMF also warns of dangers from inflation, high oil prices, and rising interest rates. Chinese delegates will meet with some of their Latin American counterparts this week at the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in Cuba. Talks will be aimed at strengthening economic and political ties. August retail sales were up only 0.2%. That's the weakest performance since June. Light sweet crude settled today at $63.30. Gold was $583.20 an ounce. Silver, $10.83 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 16 points, NASDAQ up 1, S&P 500 down 2. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's do another hour. What do you say? And we will talk about this missed opportunity in Afghanistan in just a moment. But first, I want to go to the phones. Dave is calling from Eureka, California. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Well, you got my mind off for a moment, the horrors of our present-day battles and exploitations. And I was thinking I had been a Civil War buff for a time, and I was recalling that there were several of the Confederate leaders, including generals, Lee, Longstreet, some of them, Ewell, that did not believe in slavery, that thought it was a bad thing and should have been ended before they even get into the war.
Well, Albert Sidney Johnston came from California. I don't even think he had anything to do with slaves.
No, and then there were a few Union generals that indeed owned slaves and thought it was a cool thing and didn't want to see it ended. And when Lincoln threw that in, they were thoroughly tweaked. But that was
I love all forms of American history, and being raised where I was, Dave, I couldn't help but be steeped in Civil War stuff. It fascinates me. Huh. But it's this hanging on to something that wasn't what they think it is in the first place.
The economic conflicts were probably driving much more, although with many, slavery was an evil that needed to be ended, a thing that needed to be protected. That was true with many, but it wasn't the driver, I don't believe.
Well, no, I don't think so either. And the other thing there was a move in the North for a while, small with the South, and just come to a conclusion, and you guys and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But if that had happened, Dave, the South would have balkanized probably in less than a generation. It literally becomes little fiefdoms.
You know, this question, now your own state is West Virginia, right?
Correct.
As to whether or not that was ever a legal state, because it was formed because West Virginia, part of Virginia, old Virginia, decided, well, we don't raise tobacco, we don't raise cotton, and we don't have slaves. This is not our war. And the way the Constitution of the Confederacy was set up, under that Constitution, any county or portion of a state or state could secede from the Confederacy. And so West Virginia did, and that's how...
Well, there's a couple of different historical perspectives on the formation of West Virginia, Dave, one of which is that at one point the Union recognized the government in exile that was formed in Wheeling as being the legitimate government of Virginia. And then a couple of years later, June 20th, 1863, suddenly we get carved, and there was a constitutional argument that the formation of this state was illegal.
Well, and I don't know if it was ever corrected. I'm sure it's been accepted as a state, although it has suffered greatly from North and South, because it was considered South by the North and North by the South.
Yeah, sort of like we're like a half-breed.
Yeah, so a lot of the good benefits that can come from Congress didn't come to West Virginia for a long time. But.
Well, that's true, and I think that has a lot to do with the way that, the right wing's so fond of calling Robert Byrd the king of pork, for instance.
Right.
Because he's actually gotten a couple of roads built here. There's an attitude in Washington, D.C. somehow that West Virginia deserves nothing. And it's a Republican attitude, too. Tom DeLay down in Texas, Dave, on a number of occasions pushed a rewrite of our highway infrastructure that would have said that small states, say your Rhode Island, your West Virginia's, that smaller states don't deserve as much highway infrastructure as larger states do. Whereas now it's sort of apportioned on a more equal footing. And he was also an author of the thing that would have turned the entire interstate highway system into a toll road. Mm. They are out. They're honest to God out to destroy the United States of America.
I see that happening. It's like it's just a planned demolition of the whole country. Your guy, Robert Byrd, has come a long way in his young life. He's made some good progress on it.
Well, he has made some progress, and then in other ways he hasn't. I was proud of him for his stand on the war. I was intensely proud of him, Dave. On the other hand, he has screwed up in huge terms where the bankruptcy bill is concerned.
Yeah, isn't that
the class action litigation, so-called reform bill, the estate tax,
You wouldn't think they'd have had
John Roberts, Sam Alito, just monstrous political screw-ups. But I'm going to support him in November. I didn't. I kept my word in the spring in the primaries. I said I will not cast a ballot for Robert Byrd, but he's running against a right-wing freak. I mean a freak.
Are they running on voting machines? Are we going to be dealing with Diebold?
I'm lucky. I get optical scanners here.
Oh, my. Well, that's still, I mean.
You know, yeah, where you slide the card in and into something that looks like basically a shredder.
Yes. I've been trying to put together a plan of 50,000 early Native American Indians taking voting machines and throwing them into the bay. I think that'll be the only solution to have an honest election.
Well, but, you know, there's evidence coming out, Dave, that makes it, I think the government's going to have to take a second look. You know, this isn't, these studies, this new thing out from Princeton, have you seen this? It came out yesterday. A team of real live, honest to God, get a paycheck every 2 weeks scientists at Princeton hacked in, infected a Diebold touchscreen machine with a virus, and flipped everything in the system.
You could not get as corrupt a cons as we have running our government with any kind of an honest election, I don't believe. They have to cheat, and they do cheat. That's their way.
Well, like I said, you can, if you go, you can find a link at bradblog.com. But if you go, I watched the video today, and it just made my hair stand on end. The Princeton team said it requires a paperclip and a screwdriver.
Yep.
And whatever medium you're going to use to infect the system with the virus.
And a lot of these registrars are putting the machines in the hands of their people and letting them keep them for a week or two before the election.
Sure.
That happened in our 50th California district.
No, they stayed in on the back seats of cars. They stayed in garages.
Yeah.
I know. The Busby Bilbray thing was a complete ripoff, Dave.
Total. And they learned, oh, this is another thing. Maybe we don't even have to have elections. We can just send whoever we want and get them. Because once Congress accepts somebody as a congressman, then the judicial is out of the picture anymore.
I think you're probably right. The question is, once they've been seated, the question is over.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. It's very disturbing.
Love your program, Bob.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Your whole network is a wonderful thing. I have one last thought for you on the Civil War.
Yes, go ahead.
What famous Civil War Southern general, Confederate general, broke out in tears when he learned of the assassination of Abe Lincoln? And a clue with him is that he had been twice shot in his wooden leg during the war.
Oh, golly Moses.
Richard Ewell.
Is that Ewell?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was one of the more.
Well, that's like Longstreet was vilified for, is still vilified, for basically becoming, they said he was, you know, he'd gone over to the other side, you know, became a railroad executive and urged racial tolerance, and he has taken an absolute whipping in the history books ever since because of
Lee. Well, I think that Lee was so much of a hero to the South. That when he made, and it was a blunder beyond comprehension at Gettysburg, to march, you know, divisions into headlong miles across open fields into cannons. That wasn't a smart way to do battle.
Well, it wasn't a smart place to do the battle either. But you know, that's Lee's fault. He said, you know, I'm going to fight here, and we're going to decide it here, one way or the other.
Yes, he did.
And he had no advance. He had no advance intelligence from Jeb Stuart. You know, he was off on one of his gallivants.
He was up against several armies and didn't even know it.
Right, and he didn't occupy the ground that he needed to occupy. Yeah, it was.
You stay with your good, wonderful program.
All right, we'll do. See what you can do. I can be dragged off on this topic in a minute. Thanks,
Dave.
Civil
War buff?
Oh, bad.
Yeah. You know, I think it began for me with Ken Burns and the series on PBS, but this really hooked me.
Well, it began for me when they started taking us in grade school to the Shiloh battlefield once a year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that'll do it to just about anybody. Dave, have yourself a great evening, will you?
I will do that, Bob, and you too.
Thanks. Bye now. Now this story, again, backing up, just making sure that everything is in place. Bill Clinton was accused in this mockumentary, if you will, that ran earlier this week, of having an opportunity you know, literally having Osama bin Laden in the crosshairs and not taking him out because he was too obsessed with, like, you know, Monica's thong. I mean, they flat out made that accusation. And now there, you know, and there are people out there who say, well, I didn't know about that. I'll be damned, it was Bill Clinton's fault. But here, from the Associated Press, damnedest thing I've read in a while. Now, this came out yesterday. The U.S. military acknowledged Wednesday that it considered bombing a group of more than 100 Taliban insurgents in southern Afghanistan, but decided not to. Now, an NBC News correspondent's blog got a photograph of the insurgents. And the Defense Department, at first, when they heard about it, said, you can't publish that. And they tried to have it blocked, but then they later on backed off and said, oh, no, wait a minute. No, we gave you the picture, but let us explain, please. We've got an explanation. We can explain. Let us explain. We've got an excuse. Our dog ate the coordinates. Yeah. No. Basically, there was one of those unmanned predator drones flying over this gathering of over 100 Taliban fighters. You know, the Taliban that George Bush says doesn't exist anymore. The Taliban, the insurgency that's in its last throes, only it's not. In a statement released Wednesday, the U.S. military in Afghanistan said the picture, a grainy black and white photo taken in July, was given to a journalist to show that Taliban insurgents were congregating in large groups. That the Taliban was gathering in large groups. NBC says it's the picture shows 190 Taliban militants standing in several rows near a vehicle in an open area of land. In the photo, there are, you know, brackets, you know, what you and I would consider crosshairs over the group. Kerry Sanders did the reporting. NBC News quoted one Army officer who was involved with the spy mission as saying, quote, we were so excited that the group had been spotted and was in the sights of a U.S. drone. But he said frustration soon set in after the officers realized they couldn't bomb it because it was a funeral. Really? I'm not kidding. The Defense Department officials have said repeatedly that while they try to be mindful of religious and cultural sensitivities, they make no promises that such sites can always be avoided in battle because militants often seek cover in those and other civilian sites. And yet, at the same time, the military said, during the observation of the group over a significant period of time, it was determined that the group was located on the grounds of the cemetery and were likely conducting a funeral. Likely conducting. Now, this is not absolutely certain. Likely conducting a funeral for Taliban insurgents killed in a coalition operation earlier in the day. A decision was made not to strike this group of insurgents at that specific location and time. This is where we go. It wasn't a matter of not shooting Osama bin Laden when we had a chance. No, this is 180 Taliban killers. 180 Taliban fighters. Religious weirdos who follow God knows who. And we missed him. We didn't miss. We didn't shoot! I'm not pro-war, but I am pro-competence. We're not safer. The soldiers in Afghanistan aren't safer. They're in greater danger. How the hell can you tell it's a cemetery? What the hell do the dead care? These are the people that say that they're... Oh, my God. Look, if you want to get in on this, jump in. 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Hi, this is Bruce Birch. Join me for a very special program on Friday, September the 15th. I'll have Mayor Rocky Anderson of Salt Lake City, Utah, and Sam Simpson, who is running in a congressional race in Florida's 10th District, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I suppose I could be considered insensitive for what I just said about, to rocket or not to rocket that gathering of suspected, supposed Taliban fighters. But I guess I'm a little insensitive, you see, because there's the U.S. military saying that they didn't want to send missiles into a cemetery. So apparently... And my friends here, My friends here in Appalachia can back me up on this and tell me if I'm wrong. Apparently, cemeteries in Afghanistan are more important to the Department of Defense, because I've got the quote here. Oh, just wait for it. I didn't get done with the story. No, I saved the good part. While not giving a reason for the decision, the military concluded the statement saying that while Taliban forces have killed innocent civilians during a funeral, coalition forces, quote, hold themselves to a higher moral and ethical standard than their enemies. To which I would probably respond with a number of words that even though we're not under the thumb or boot or iron heel of the FCC and I can use them, I refuse to. You can guess which words those might be. Higher moral and ethical standard, my left hind foot. Is it a higher moral and ethical standard when a kid on a guided missile cruiser somewhere in the Persian Gulf back in March of 2003 pushed a button on the command of someone who considered himself an officer and a gentleman, and out of that guided missile cruiser leapt a Tomahawk cruise missile bound for Baghdad and flying at less than 100 feet above the surface of the earth? Was it a higher moral and ethical standard when that self-same Tomahawk cruise missile slammed into the home of a furniture vendor, of a truck driver, of a cabbie, of a physician? Was that the higher moral and ethical standard? Do you remember the night that CNN showed the shock and awe attack and a boom, 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 and big just explosions all over Baghdad? Was every one of those aimed at one of Saddam's body doubles? Hell no. Of course not. Go and look at the pictures if you want to see the higher moral and ethical standards of the Bush administration's misguided approach to military force. See the man standing next to the truck bed, next to the rubble of the mud hut, holding the limp and ragdoll-like corpse of his little girl. And then watch a Pentagon briefing with that creep General Myers. As he said, well, you know, we try to keep collateral damage to a minimum. So I suppose minimal collateral damage is about, 3 feet tall, 4 years old. Is that the higher moral and ethical standard? And like I said, here in Appalachia, companies like Massey Energy bulldoze entire 250, 300-year-old cemeteries into a heap in the bottom of a holler, to scrape it so that they can blast away a 6-inch seam of coal. It has happened all over southern West Virginia, and the Bush administration isn't too terribly concerned about a higher moral or ethical standard when they're pushing the relatives, the forebears, the ancestors of people who still walk these hills and hollers unceremoniously into a ditch. So, This is a really weird story, because what it is the military got caught with its pants down again. Okay. The incompetent, politically appointed heads like Peter Pace, Richard Myers, Ricardo Sanchez, people who have a lot of jewelry on their shoulder boards because they have the right political viewpoint and have therefore been elevated to high position where they will never, by God, never hear a shot fired in anger, have been caught once again putting American lives in danger. How much news have you heard about the surrender of Pakistan in the tribal areas along the border with Afghanistan? They pulled out. They quit. They went away. That's our coalition partner. Our coalition partner, General Pervez Musharraf of Pakistan, who has promised me that they are continuing to press forward in the fight on terror. No, they're not. They quit. And the Taliban is at large in Afghanistan. And I don't know, the Coca-Cola Corporation may have been a little bit preemie opening up that $25 million Coke plant. Because one never knows how much longer we can hold Kabul or anywhere else in Afghanistan. Because back when we were on the march and back when we had run the Taliban pretty much out of the joint, George Bush and Dick Cheney pulled out special forces because they wanted them for the war they were making up in Iraq. I am a peacenik, okay? I do not believe in fighting for fighting's sake. But, you know, I had seen as far back as before the year 2000 that there was ugly, ugly crap going on in Afghanistan. When you see people that are so beastly that they go and they blow up 1,000-year-old statues that were hand-carved into the cliffs of Bamiyan because they show the Buddha and these people are such hardcore weirdos from hardcore religious weirdos that they believe that you can't, you can't take my picture, you'll get my soul. When they're that weird, you know you got trouble. And there it was. And they were proud of the fact that they were dynamiting these 1,000-year-old bas-relief statues that were carved into the very living rock of the Bamiyan Valley. I knew we were dealing with crazy people. They were going into the museums in Kabul and just routinely smashing precious, priceless pieces of art. They were shooting people in soccer stadiums. They were beheading people for misquoting the Quran. Weird, weird, hateful people. I knew there was going to be trouble. I knew it. And then we find out, you know, it's the business with, the Osama bin Laden, and, clean them out. I'm a peaceful guy. But they didn't want peace with us. So it seemed rational and reasonable that, you know, we had some level of activity there. I don't think we did it the right way. But now we find out that when we had a chance to get Osama bin Laden, we let him go. When we had a chance to finish off the Taliban, we didn't. We pulled out our special forces. Pat Tillman was killed by his own troops, and the Pentagon had to lie about it. There is more Afghan heroin on the market now than there has ever been before. And the military wants to tell us about how a decision was made not to strike the group of insurgents at that specific location and time because our forces hold themselves to a higher moral and ethical standard than their enemies. Huh. As the article notes at the bottom, mosques and similar locations have become frequent sites of violence in the U.S.-led wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But just not this. And I don't think it, I got a feeling it didn't look like Arlington National Cemetery from the air. It was a whole, it was a bunch of people who are, you know, if they weren't being pressed by us, would be out slaughtering women for learning to read. Screw them. And back here at home, here in these hills and hollers of Appalachia, that higher moral and ethical standard means that we get the equivalent of one Hiroshima bomb approximately every 9 days used on us. Somehow I think moral and ethical standards have to, you know, it's got to be one of those across-the-board things. You know, you can't be cafeteria moral and ethical, to use one of those, one of the weirdo words. We're at the bottom of the hour. If you want to involve yourself in the program, you know how to do so. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email roars into bob@headonradio.com. And you are welcome to make contact in any way that you see fit. We'll be right back. Workers Independent News is up next. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The UAW has agreed with Ford Motor Company on a buyout offer to 75,000 UAW Ford workers. Ford has lost market share and is closing factories. These buyouts offer a variety of retirement incentives for workers to leave Ford. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says UAW members are once again stepping up to make hard choices under difficult circumstances. UAW Vice President Bob King says the UAW is trying to make sure that these reductions in the Ford workforce are voluntary. More than 1,000 workers in one Pennsylvania county have been told to prepare for a strike. Jesse Russell has more.
Workers in Westmoreland County are represented by the Service Employees International Union. The union and the county have been in negotiations since late last year, with their contract expiring at the beginning of this year. Last month, in an overwhelming vote, the workers rejected the most recent contract offer and empowered union leadership to call a strike if a new agreement cannot be reached. According to the union, that walkout could come as early as September 26. Negotiations have stymied on issues concerning insurance and compensation. The union represents emergency dispatchers, road crews, and courthouse workers, as well as others. The county says it has made its final offer and is prepared for the possibility of a strike.
Flight attendants at Mesaba Airlines have won a federal court victory that overturns an earlier decision allowing Mesaba to throw out its union contracts. Mesaba management had threatened to impose a 19.4% wage and benefit cut. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, called the court win a monumental victory for Mesaba workers and employees everywhere. The union says now it's time for Mesaba to drop the litigation and bargain fairly with its flight attendants. American Rights at Work, formed in 2004 to protect, advance, and restore workers' rights to form unions, has launched a new website exposing an anti-union propaganda network. Kim Freeman is communications director for American Rights at Work.
This powerful, well-financed, well-coordinated, but virtually unknown web of organizations and individuals are playing an enormous role in fostering the climate to severely limit workers' abilities to form unions.
Garbage is still piling up in Sacramento, but the county and workers are talking again, so while the sanitation strike will continue there, residents can get ready to stop holding their breaths. Last county offer includes a bigger pay raise. Here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
If you think tossing back a few drinks after work is draining your wallet, think again. A new study published in the Journal of Labor Research and Reason found that drinkers earn on average 10 to 14% more at their jobs than non-drinkers. And men who hit the bars at least once a month, they tend to bring in 7% more in additional pay. Report co-author Edward Stringham suggested that social drinking helps build social capital.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
minutes before the hour. Instead of having my skull just split wide open, why don't we just sit back and listen to this for a minute? That chant is just enchanting. Yes. I want to put a little bit of perspective into the fear that Dear Leader tries to infect us with. You know, he couldn't get through the 9/11 memorial speech without mentioning Iraq. It's the central part of the war on terror. Honest to God. This is something sent to me by our good friend Victor. By Ron Singel, A Million Ways to Die. September 11, 2001 was undoubtedly one of the darkest and deadliest days in the United States history. Al-Qaeda's attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center killed 2,976 people. And by the way, Dear Leader has now killed more in Afghanistan and Iraq than were killed on that horrible day. Hell of a milestone. And the country recoiled in horror as we witnessed the death of thousands of Americans when the towers fell. The government spent billions in the last 5 years on anti-terrorism projects, started a preemptive war on false pretenses, and advised citizens to stock up on duct tape and plastic sheeting. But the writer notes that your appendix is more likely to kill you than Osama is. And in this chart, as it was sent to me, you know, it's red, orange, yellow, pink and green, or what, you know, whatever the Tom Ridge system is. Dig these numbers. This is a ranking of the various dangers confronting America based on the number of mortalities in each category throughout the 11-year period spanning 1995 to 2005. Up there on the red zone, severe threat level, driving off the road, 254,419. Falling, 146,542. Accidental poisoning, 140,327. High risk, down one notch from severe. Dying from work, 59,730. Oh, that's an entirely separate subject, isn't it? Dying from work. That's when you get blown up in a coal mine or buried in a rock fall or electrocuted because on when you're working on a power line or any number of the industrial accidents that claim Americans every blessed day. And then your widow or your widower has to go and go begging and fighting, trying to claim workers the pittance that workers' compensation pays you. High risk, walking down the street, 52,000 deaths over the last 11 years from that. Accidentally drowning, 38,302. Elevated risk, this is where you get down, see, red, orange, yeah, this is down to yellow. Killed by the flu. 19,415 people dying from a hernia. Dying from a hernia. 16,742. Guarded, the next step down on the list. Accidental firing of a gun. 8,536. That's what got my brother. Electrocution. 5,171. And then low risk, being shot by law enforcement is a relatively low risk, 3,949. Terrorism, huh, a low risk, how about that? Getting shot by the cops and getting killed by Osama are on the same scale. Terrorism, 3,147. Carbon monoxide in products. You know, plastic bag over the head, that kind of thing. 1,554. So while there were 3,147 terrorism deaths in the period between 1995 and 2006, there were a quarter of a million deaths from people driving off the road. Now, I this isn't funny. It's not even remotely humorous. But it does serve to point out in very stark terms just exactly what it is that Dear Leader is trying to do to you and to me and to all of us. He is trying to make you more afraid of being killed by a terrorist than of something that is a real risk to you, and that is a traffic accident. This culture, this entire nation is upside down. We're screwed sideways. It's like we're on some sort of an ugly acid binge, where everything is scary, and everything is frightening, and everything morphs into some sort of terrifying hallucination. Our national hallucination right now is a jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout that lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and goes by the name of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. You dig? You want to be scared? It's up to you. But my suggestion is go through life. And cherish what you see, and cherish whom you see, what you find, who you find, as much as is humanly possible. Because you know what? The terrorists aren't going to get you. The terrorists aren't going to get you. Now, the trans fats in that pre-prepared meal you just got out of the, you know, that'll get you. Over time, that will get you. Drink too much, that'll get you. Smoke too much, that will get you. The odds of Osama bin Laden getting you are approaching, or any other terrorist, dadgummit, are approaching mathematical zero. On the other hand, there are many policies promulgated by the Bush administration that could have you dead tomorrow. Now you tell me who the terrorist is. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our friend Bob from North Dakota. Bob, welcome aboard.
My goodness. You're working hard tonight, huh?
Yeah, you know, just trying to earn it.
Earn what?
It.
What is it? What is it?
Then my next minute on the planet, Bob, you know?
Yes. That's it. That is it. And guess what? I just got back from Bismarck, North Dakota.
From Bismarck? Okay.
Yeah. That's in a little south of me. But I took my son down there. And, you know, he's a hard-working man like you would. Well, like the forebears, all those people that have done so much to make this nation a nation. You know, he's just a working man. He hurt himself on the job. And I took him down, and he hurt his back. And he couldn't walk. He was like a 28-year-old man, and he looked older than me. And he used to be my youngest son, and then William came along, my love child. And, you know, you think about it, Bob. Think about it. You got a child in pain, in misery, in agony. You know, and what do? You fight for him. You fight for his life, his longevity. You try to find out what's happening. Took him down to the bone joint center, and they got good doctors, And not like in Williston, we got quacks. And you know, Williston, North Dakota, we got quacks. And, you know, it's kind of like we're on the fringe, you know, like West Virginia. We're out there somewhere where nobody cares. Like you were talking about, you know, they blow the tops off the mountains. They rip off 6 inches of coal to what? To burn it?
Yeah.
To the poison the atmosphere, and they destroy graveyards of valiant Americans
people that,
pioneers, for God's sakes, Bob. Pioneers, frontiersmen.
People that created this nation. They just dumped the bones into what?
They don't even dump them. They just bulldoze them over the side into the holler.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Down into, you know, they're not even recognized anymore. They're just discarded like veterans of like of World War One, World War Two, World War Three, Iraq. I'm not even going to bring in Vietnam and Korea. I'm not even, they're just footnotes. You know, we're not even recognized anymore, Bob. We are nothing. We are less than nothing. Okay?
Well, I disagree to a certain
point.
I do disagree.
But I'm telling you what it feels like to be where I'm at. Okay? We are less than nothing. You know, it's like we talk about all the great wars. The Civil War was a great war? No, it was not a great war. It was when a nation split itself in half. And, Bob, we're splitting our nation in half. Right now, we're splitting in half more than we did back then.
Every bit as much as went on then. We just haven't gotten to the gunfire part.
Okay, well, it's not going to come to gunfire. It's going to come to I have a dear friend. He's the sheriff of this county, and they're beefing up their force, and they're bringing in young men that are they're not knowledgeable of anything. All they are is taught. They're trained. They're indoctrinated, if you want, into a chain of thought like I was back in 1966. I was indoctrinated into a chain of thought. And I was brainwashed into believing I was fighting an enemy. And I would give you a chance that we were taught in boot camp, but it's not worthy of anything, but it's like Ho Chi Minh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I won't give you the expletives because I love you, Jeff. I love this. I love this head-on network. But like you said, I will not use those words because they're not worthy of me. I will not spit out what's in my heart and in my mind because it's not worthy of you, your lovely wife, your...
Well, you know, thank you, Bob. But the fact of the matter is, what I'm trying to get at is, if every member of the Taliban had his way and was able to, and Osama bin Laden was able to work his will on a day in and day out basis, they could not destroy this nation if they tried. The only people who are capable of destroying this nation is us.
Absolutely, you hit the nail on the head. See, when you don't respect your neighbor, when you think your neighbor thinks other than you think, and, you know, hey, if you want terrorists to win, then be a terrorist. I mean, you can terrorize your neighbor by making him think that maybe he's not like me. And then, goodness gracious, Osama bin Laden wins. But guess what? Osama bin Laden is nobody. He never existed. He was a creation. He was something that somebody else came up with. Hey, we got to have an enemy. So let's get this gigantic monster.
Yeah, and let's make sure that the enemy is really far, far, far away so that there's no chance that the rest of America can ever figure out that he's not worth the effort we're laying out on him.
You finally figured out. It's kind of like, Ho Chi Minh. You know, it's kind of like we were after Ho Chi Minh. You know, hey, goodness gracious. I got a friend that told me, he says, hey, Bob, he says, when I went into Nam, he says, when I got there, he says, Boot,
when you got here, you know, you will be here before, you know, Ho Chi Minh will die before you, but you ain't going to get back to America. And he got back to America, he said, you know, and the SOB died before I did. You know, and he got back here to...
Well, I mean, look, look,
Vietnam,
Bob.
You're talking, hey, you aren't talking Vietnam. Nobody talks Vietnam because Vietnam is a ancient history. In fact, if you go into the school books, you'll find about two paragraphs that talk about it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the honest truth. I think about it quite a bit, Bob, because if, for instance, if I had my druthers, as much as I love being here, I would have gotten on the road this evening and I would have driven up to Morgantown, West Virginia, because my beloved Mountaineers are playing football right now. Now, driving up to Morgantown, Bob, on Interstate 79, you cross into Monongalia County on the Tommy Bennett Memorial Bridge. Tommy Bennett was the first American soldier to be awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor as a conscientious objector since Alvin York.
Okay.
And he did it for the service that he rendered in Vietnam. So I had for a professor there a girl who was a dear friend of Tommy's at WVU, and she made us all swear to always remember him. So, you know, everybody doesn't forget, Bob.
I'm not saying everybody forgets, but you see, we weave everything into another thing. But this is not a Vietnam. This is not a Vietnam.
No, this is going to be worse than Vietnam, Bob.
No. It is worse. It is much worse.
It's already, you're saying, it's already worse.
You know why? Because the children coming home are discarded, disregarded, and disrespected when they get back. The veterans coming home are no longer veterans. They're just like kind of chaff in the wind. They have nothing.
Well, you know, when I was at Camp Democracy, Bob, when I was at Camp Democracy, I got straightened up in a hurry. I went over to the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Against the War tent, and I hadn't said anything yet, but they said, look, you know, when you run across a veteran, do yourself a favor. Don't say thank you for your service, because that's a big insult to a lot of them. Just say welcome home.
Yeah. Well,
just say welcome home.
Yeah, I didn't get welcomed home. Until after they planted that big, ugly scar in Washington. It is a big, ugly scar. See, most people that didn't lose a friend, or have to be there, doesn't know that slap they put in the ground is not a beat for victory. It is an ugly scar on my heart, and nobody knows how much it hurts.
No one can know.
No, but it does.
And yet it's gonna happen again. There's more land out there on the National Mall in Washington D.C. And before this is all over, we'll wind up having to put another. And then I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. We're going to wind up putting another damn monument on the Mall to the fallen, to the ones who didn't come home. And that Mall, that Vietnam Memorial is it's a way of remembering who didn't come home, but it's a monumental memorial. To the abject stupidity of people.
To a disaster, Bob.
Yeah, okay,
Vietnam
yeah, to a disaster.
Disaster.
And so I've gotten
it
to...
It was a disaster. It killed my friends, it killed my loved ones, it killed my family.
And so Bob, the next one, I guess, they made it sort of in that chevron shape, if you look at it from above, the Vietnam Veteran Memorial.
Yeah,
I'm thinking the next one is a long, snaky-looking granite oil pipeline with names written on it.
Kind of like the Alaska fiasco. I can remember when they put that damn thing in. I just...
Yeah. Well, we're going to get another one because, you know, George says we're not going to leave while he's president. Bob, we're out of time. We've got to hit the news. Thank you for your thoughts. I do appreciate it. Always good to hear from you, okay?
Sorry, I...
Don't apologize.
No, I'm sorry that... goodness gracious, you are
Luther King, and you will do well, and I give you all my strength, and to your family, all my love.
And ours right back to you, Bob. You take care, my friend.
Brother says, hey, Agnes, it's me, Paul.
You take care, Bob. We're out of here.
We'll see you, boy.
Later.
You. Take care. Bye.
Bye now. Our friend Bob from North Dakota. He sees from a long distance. It's time for the news. You can get in on this, too, if you want to. 877-443-2366 is the number. I'm going to sneak out of the room and go see how the Mountaineers are doing. I'm sorry, I got to do that. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A Republican-led Senate committee passed legislation today to protect the civil rights of terror suspects on trial. Earlier, President Bush lobbied on Capitol Hill to push for his own version of the bill. It calls for a reinterpretation of the Geneva Conventions, which would allow for tougher interrogations at military tribunals. On Capitol Hill, the House approved a bill to erect a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border. Supporters say that will allow Border Patrol agents to focus more on apprehending illegal immigrants. California Representative Ed Royce said, quote, "We're now facing infiltration by members of terrorist organizations like Hezbollah." Also on Capitol Hill, the Senate is expected to pass a port security bill this week. Among other things, it would require that background checks for port workers be completed within a certain time frame and expand a program to screen for dirty bombs. In Iraq today, four American soldiers were killed in insurgent attacks. The U.S. command also reports another U.S. soldier was killed yesterday near Mosul. Also in Baghdad today, police found the bodies of 20 men dumped in different locations. The U.S.-led coalition also reportedly killed a senior member of Al-Qaeda in Iraq and captured another. In Afghanistan, officials say Taliban forces are gathering in a western province that borders Iran. If the military threat isn't crushed soon, they say the area could become a sanctuary for Taliban fighters. Poland says it will send 1,000 more troops in February. Amnesty International is accusing Hezbollah of possible war crimes against Israel during the so-called 34-day war. The group has made similar charges against Israel and is requesting an inquiry by the United Nations. In Gaza, Hamas cabinet members have turned in their resignations to the Palestinian prime minister. It's the first step in President Mahmoud Abbas's plan to create a coalition government. In Russia, a prominent banker who led the fight against money laundering has been assassinated. He was ambushed last night. No arrests have been made. A Federal Communications Commission report found that media conglomerations hurt local news coverage. That study, which was conducted 2 years ago, was then ordered destroyed. But California Senator Barbara Boxer received a copy from an FCC whistleblower and is demanding answers from the FCC chairman. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Cash-strapped Air America has laid off what it calls a handful of employees following a move to a less powerful signal. However, a spokeswoman denies rumors that the network has plans to file for bankruptcy. The Atlantis crew has fixed a problem with solar wings added to the space station earlier this week. The third and final spacewalk will take place tomorrow. The dwarf planet previously known as Xena has a new name, Eris,
after the Greek goddess of discord and strife. NASA studies show that winter sea ice in the Arctic is now melting at a much faster rate. Researchers say it's a sure sign of global warming. The United Auto Workers says Ford will offer buyouts to about 75,000 of its unionized employees as part of an effort to cut costs amid slumping sales. Dell Computers says desktop computers will start being produced at its new facility in India by mid-2007. It's Dell's first investment in an India-based manufacturing facility. General Electric is selling a majority stake in its advanced materials unit to a private investment group. The sale is expected to generate $2 billion, which GE will use to restructure its industrial business. August retail sales were up only 0.2%. That's the weakest performance since June. Light sweet crude settled today at $63.30. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 16 points, NASDAQ up 1, S&P down 2. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Six after, and for those of you who are interested, West Virginia University 31, Maryland 7. Let's go. I'm sorry. There are things I still like outside of politics and Republican bashing. You'll have to forgive me. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Susan joins us from Oregon. Susan, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I have kind of a rhetorical question.
Okay.
I grew up knowing that at any time a whole slew of ICBMs could turn me into radioactive blast at any time.
Sure.
I have a medical condition that could kill me any time. And I live right across the river from an active volcano. Now, can you explain to me why I should be afraid of Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, I'd say 6 foot 4 inch Arabs on dialysis machines got nothing on where you are.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem to really bother my event horizon anything anyway at all. The thing that really bothers me is I keep hearing the saying about repeating history in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I keep thinking of the early part of the 18th century and what happened to Napoleon when he got cranky. Basically, the entire world at that time united and said, okay, if you're not going to behave, we're going to make you. And they invaded France, which at the time was the most powerful nation in the world.
Absolutely.
So if we don't take care of this Yahoo, sooner or later, the world's going to do it for us.
Well, I fear that there's an element of truth in what you say, Susan. And, of course, I think the pigs project a certain amount of their own terror onto us. Because, you see, Osama bin Laden, Susan, can hurt them. He can hurt them bad. They took a big lick. You know, granted, it was mostly working people. It was a bunch of union folks who got killed on 9/11, but the financial lick was doled out to our ruling class.
Right.
In the form of you know, the stock markets took an absolute bath.
Right.
And so Osama can hurt them. He can hurt the money structure. It came out to a certain extent in the little bit of truth telling that Michael Skeletor Chertoff did day before yesterday when he said, "Look, you know, the only way Osama can hurt us is if he makes us go on a spending spree," and that was his excuse for not protecting nuclear power plants and chemical facilities and oil refineries and fragile facilities on fragile environmental grounds. That was his excuse.
Isn't that what we've been on since Bush got into office, is a massive spending spree?
Precisely.
Yeah, and all that money and all that debt is going to China. China is going to be the new financial power in the world. That could be us.
Well, not just financial, though, Susan. Military.
Yeah.
And frankly, we are, well, I keep going back. You can't watch it anymore. I checked to see because it was so brilliant. I wanted to hang on to it. But Ha 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 America, that film from last year's Sundance Festival, you know, it said America is a rounding error to China, population-wise.
Yeah.
Now, I think last year we launched 7 new naval vessels. They launched 24. And, you know, they don't, you know, they don't have to come shooting at us. They can just wait for us to collapse.
Right. Just exactly like we did with Russia.
Right. And and we're well on the way to it, Susan.
Welcome to the third world. You were right. The only people that can kill this country is us. And with Bush's help, we're doing a real fine job.
Well, they're doing a fine job. I think people like you, people like me, folks that listen to this program, we'd like to empower ourselves to fight back somehow. But you see, we're in many ways we're in a box to begin with, because you know how are we going to prop up the American economy? How can we do our part?
Yeah. What,
you know, go to Walmart and buy more Chinese garbage?
I refuse to even walk in the joint.
I don't blame you. And I eschew it as well. But you know, how do we support American stuff? You know, we run the ads on here for nosweatshop.com
mm-hmm.
and Union Made American Apparel. You know, that's one way you can do it. But you know, that's one or two or three or however many people that go through the link at our site to do that. They appreciate it, but it's not going to prop up an economy. We need real leadership, and we need real goals and real directions, giving us answers that, frankly, I don't have.
Yeah, neither do I. The only thing I can do is rant.
And go about your business.
And
not be afraid, and maybe help others not be afraid.
And almost everybody I call are just the same thing. Are you registered to vote? You're not? Why not? You are? Are you going to vote? Why not?
Susan, tell me, how do you answer them when they say, well, you know, that we've got the machines?
A landslide will overthrow the machine. And if you don't vote, you give it to them.
You have to at least try, don't you?
Yeah. I may go down, but I'm going to take an honor guard with me.
By God, I like the way you think.
I'm Scott. What can I say?
Same here.
Glenn McCulloch.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. So good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Take care in the shadow of that volcano. And, you know, her story is similar to most of it. There are things out there that are a lot more likely to do us in than any crazed religious freak, be they right-wing Christian religion industry or right-wing Muslim religion industry. There's stuff out there that's more likely to kill us than them. Now, of the two, the right-wing Christian religion industry is more likely to do us in here in the United States, because you got the Christian Reconstruction Movement. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. And that guy who says, you know, I want to go back to the days of stoning because we got lots of rocks. I mean, those were his words. We have lots of rocks. Now, I keep an eye on the religion industry. You know that. And you know how much I don't watch television, so I'll have to take these freaks at their word. But the latest hissy to come out of the American Family Association. You know, recently they've been on this tear where they want to destroy working families who work for Ford Motor Company. And they want to make sure that they lose their jobs because Ford sells cars to people who have sex somehow that the American Family Association doesn't like for them to have sex. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine the level of nosiness that has to be involved in a human being? Questionable use of the term thereof. That has to, in a person. I mean, we're not talking about anybody out there in the streets. I mean, this is not a Beatles record. This is not Why Don't We Do It in the Road, okay? But Ford Motor Company sells automobiles to people, and they don't ask them how they have sex. And they do happen to advertise in magazines that speak to people of various and sundry lifestyles. You know, Ford advertises with the gun people, and Ford advertises with the people who love their pets. And Ford advertises with people who like to go hiking and camping and backpacking. And Ford advertises with people who like to go to sporting events. And Ford advertises, and they happen to advertise with people who go to gay bars or are in homosexual relationships or wear clothing differently than Reverend Donald Wildman would like for them to. And because out of all of those groups, the gay lifestyle is included, the American Family Association has decided that the people who work for Ford no longer deserve to have jobs, and they mounted a boycott. That's how simple it is. Now, what are they having a hissy about today, the American Family Association? Dear Bob, they call me Bob. We're friends. Not even Mr. Kincaid. Dear Bob, ABC's Rosie O'Donnell told a nationwide audience this week that radical Christians are as radical as are the same as radical Muslims who piloted hijacked jetliners into New York's Twin Towers, who chop off heads of individuals, and who bomb innocent children in suicide attacks. O'Donnell made her comments as host of ABC TV's The View. These poor goobers. On the one hand, they have to love ABC because ABC just put that silly little mockumentary on. But now ABC's turned around and put a shiv between the ribs of the American Family Association because they got that mean old lesbian Rosie O'Donnell out there talking about how Christians are as dangerous as Muslims. Poor stupid Donald Wildman, who, by the way, has yet to respond to my invitation to be on this program. Poor stupid Donald Wildman. Apparently can't do as much math as I can and add up just how dangerous Christianity can be when left unchecked, when sanctioned by the state, when you get inquisitions and crusades and, oh, holocausts and, you know the drill. And they put this in bold. Radical Christianity is just as threatening as radical Islam in a country like America where we have separation of church and state, O'Donnell said. She had been saying that America was attacked not by a nation. She continued, as a result of the attack and the killing of 3,000 innocent people, we invaded two countries and killed innocent people. Even her liberal co-hosts were shocked by her comments. Her liberal co-hosts, you know, her communist co-hosts, her dirty, viral, contagious, liberal. Did you hear? We called her a lib. They're all liberals there. And they were shocked, even the filthy liberals. You see, there's a little truth-telling going on. And I don't watch The View. And I won't be watching The View. Agnes can't stand The View. Co-host Joy Behar protested that Christians are not trying to impose mass murder on America. Aren't they, Joy, dear? Somebody needs to tell Joy Behar, Behar, Bear, I don't know, somebody needs to tell that woman about R.J. Rushdoony, may he roast in hell, and his Christian Reconstructionists, because you know what, Joy Behar, they'd kill you in a minute, and they'd stone your friend Rosie to death, because their leader says there's a lot of rocks and it's easier than an electric chair or a firing squad or a noose. They admit that they want to use constitutional principles of government to destroy the constitutional form of government that we have. So, yeah, I'm on board with Rosie O'Donnell. I will agree that Christian so-called... See, that's where we get in trouble calling them Christians. They're not Christians. They're authoritarian religious fanatics. But it's part of taking back the language that we no longer refer to these people as Christians. If you hate anybody on planet Earth, if you believe you are better than anybody on planet Earth, if you believe that you are more entitled to something than anyone else on planet Earth, if you believe that after you're dead, you're somehow going to be better off after you're dead than somebody else who's dead on planet Earth, you are not a Christian. And I've had conversations with Muslims who say the same thing. If you feel it, you are not a Muslim. I've had conversations with Jewish friends who said, and you're not a good Jew either. You could take Osama bin Laden and Donald Wildman and Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and Ayman al-Zawahiri and put them all in a room and put out cakes and tea, and they would sit down and have a fine old time because they're the same thing. O'Donnell was saying there is no difference between the radical Muslims who kill in the name of Allah and Bible-believing Christians who follow the teachings of Jesus. No, she didn't say that. She said there's no difference between the radical Muslims who kill in the name of Allah and radical Christians who kill in the name of Jesus. That's what she said. That's what she meant. Neither O'Donnell nor ABC apologized for the comments. Take action, Bob Kincaid. Tell ABC that O'Donnell's comments deserve an apology and a reprimand. Send the email to ABC asking for an apology and reprimand. Forward this to your friends and family and ask them to send the email to ABC. Now, this is where I have fun because they've got the little form email. I always click on the form email and eliminate all the stuff that they put in there for me to write. And instead, I write a thing like, you know, dear ABC, you're probably getting a lot of emails from a bunch of weirdos at the American Family Association. Please ignore them, as these people don't have the common good sense it takes to come in to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel or come in out of the rain. And I at least get to feel a little bit better that way. So, you know, that's where I am. And I got some good news coming. I think we're going to take a break here in a second. I kind of have to look to Agnes for that kind of direction. She runs the technical end of things. But I think we are going to take a break when we come back. Your phone calls are welcome, of course, at 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. And like I said, I got a little bit of good news. A little bit of role modeling, if you will. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Ben, where are we?
What, are you born yesterday? We're at the doctor's office.
I'm sick? Already? Oh, break it to me, Ben. What have I got?
Kid, relax. We're here for our second newborn screening.
A newborn screening? What's that?
You see, we got tested for these rare diseases when we are first born. But sometimes they don't show up till we're older. So you got to get the second test between 7 and 14 days.
Diseases? I feel sick. Oh, I better got something in the nursery. Remember that kid who screamed all the time?
Breathe, baby. This test is for treatable stuff. If anything is wrong, now's the time to find out.
I heard even healthy-looking kids can have something deadly, Ben.
That's why every baby's gotta go back for his second screening.
So, with the second heel stick, you think my chances are good?
Heel stick? What heel stick? Nobody told me nothing about a heel stick.
Oh, brother!
For information on this newborn screening program, call the Tech Department of Health.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
27 after the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And I told you I had some good news for you. And I do indeed. And all of your congratulations are certainly warranted to our good friend, Ed Wiley. Ed Wiley is a grandfather from Southern West Virginia. And you know what Ed Wiley just got done doing? Ed Wiley saw that children at Marsh Fork Elementary School were going to school in literally toxic filth, endangering their lives every day going to school next to a god-awful Massey Energy coal preparation plant called Goals Coal. Going to school every day 200 feet back and 500, 600 feet up from beneath a toxic sludge dam holding back something like 2.8 billion gallons of carcinogenic jello from the coal industry. So Ed saw this going on, and he affiliated himself. Yeah. Trouble with the language. It's getting late. He affiliated himself with some fine folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, other environmental groups in southern West Virginia. And they created a push to build a new school at Marsh Fork Elementary, away from all the filth, away from all the poison, away from all the toxicity. and they called that organization Pennies of Promise. You can see it on the website, penniesofpromise.org. And they're trying to raise $5 million to build a new school. But Ed was behind it all. I mean, Ed supported it all. But Ed realized that there was more that needed to be done. So Ed started walking. Ed left Charleston, West Virginia last month. And yesterday, Ed Wiley, grandfather, reached Washington, D.C., walked the entire way, 400-plus miles. The walk started on August the 2nd. Now, Ed has called this program a couple of times. Ed said that during his walk, he has yet to meet a single human being who hasn't in some way offered support for what he's doing. Now, he's being ignored. He is being utterly ignored by Governor Joe Manchin. He's being ignored by the school building authority. And I haven't had an update yet to see if he got the meeting that he was seeking with Senator Robert Byrd. Because Senator Byrd is a Southern West Virginian himself. When was the last time you heard of somebody just getting up and doing something like this? Isn't it inspiring when people decide to empower themselves? When people decide that it's no longer acceptable to take things as they are handed to them, but instead decide to get up and go and do. I know Ed. I consider Ed a friend of mine. And Ed is now not just a friend, Ed is a hero. Now, mountaintop removal and the safety of Marsh Fork Elementary School has been featured on ABC's World News Tonight. It's been in National Geographic, Vanity Fair, and Oprah's O Magazine. And I think probably without too much personal trumpet tooting, I can say with some certainty that the first time a national audience began to really hear about what mountaintop removal does in Appalachia happened on this program. Now, at one point, a very committed activist in the MTR movement was on Al Franken's show, and Al made jokes about hillbillies. But if you listen to this program often enough, you will find out that the history that lies in these hills, on these hills and in these hollers, is profound and has had a literally life-changing effect on this entire nation. It was people from the hills and hollers who ran to Kings Mountain and fought off the British and saved the revolution. I'm not going to go through the entire litany. It's too long. But once again, there's a man, there's Ed Wiley, taking it on himself. Ed, not too many months back, Ed went to the steps of the Capitol and said, I'm going to sit here till Governor Manchin comes out and talks to me. And he sat down, and he got his meeting. And then he found out that the meeting didn't have any substance behind it. So, the walk, the lone march on Washington, D.C. was conceived. And it was accomplished. I hope I will hear from Ed or from one of the folks who were involved with the movement to tell us that, in fact, Senator Byrd, who is in the middle of a political campaign against a guy who, if he were to win, would be the best friend that mountaintop removal ever had in the United States Senate, I'm hoping I'm going to hear that Senator Byrd has met with Ed Wiley and has told him that there will be change and that he will help to effect it. Because if I do hear that, I can feel a lot better. I can forgive a lot of Senator Byrd's mistakes over the last couple of years if I see that he actually cares about children and that he cares to see them not go to school in toxic filth and carcinogenic dust and goo. So that when it rains, and it rains in West Virginia, it does, you know, I mean, we're not talking Oregon, Washington, upper northwest rain, but we get as much rain as here as we do as any place on the East Coast. We're the most well-watered, one of the most well-watered states in the Mid-Atlantic region. And you see, when it rains at Marsh Fork Elementary, children look out the window and they look across the river and they see that, and it's not an earthen dam, it is literally a pile of rubble. And they see that, and they know that the minute that that thing gives, they're all dead. So, congratulations to you, Ed Wiley. I should have put this on the air last night. It got away from me. But congratulations to you, Ed. Congratulations to you all at penniesofpromise.org. Congratulations to you at Coal River Mountain Watch. Congratulations to you at Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. Congratulations to you at the Highlands Conservancy. Congratulations to all of you for caring. Congratulations to you for showing the rest of us the way. Congratulations for trying to give my children, your grandchildren, perhaps even my father's great-grandchildren, a future. Congratulations to you. You have, Lord God, you have my respect, and you have my admiration. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Jim. Jim, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Oh, good evening. How are you, Bob?
I'm well, thank you.
Earlier, I think you were discussing war memorials and things of that nature.
Briefly, yes.
Well, you know, Washington, of course, is the city of Phil's memorial to the different wars in which we have been engaged. And I remember back in the early 80s, the efforts that were made to achieve some type of memorial to the Vietnam veterans or those people who did not come home or who did come home. But these people were, of course, came home in a box with a flag on it. And it's, you know, a beautifully crafted and very elegant creation of Maya Lin, the wall, and then, of course, the statuary and things of that nature, the names of the people who didn't make it. And I guess these are monuments to our glory, and they're also monuments to our lack of ability to make the right choice at the right time.
Well, I was speaking particularly in regard to the Vietnam memorial, Jim, because every name that is chiseled there is a name that did not have to be there, and it'll be the same way with whatever memorial they build to Iraq.
That's the way it always is. I mean, if you go to Belgium, you will see in almost every marketplace, in every public place, market monuments that bear the terminology, Fusilé pour les Allemands, shot by the Germans, things of that nature.
Right.
But one that really has impressed me, and it was on the campus of the University of South Carolina, was to the people who fought in the First World War, and it's on the International Studies Building, or it was at that time. And written across the top of the building was a simple sentence, dedicated to the people who died in the mud mausoleum to the Western Front of the First World War. And it simply said, they strove that war might cease.
An honorable undertaking. But, of course, sad to say, they failed, did they not?
unfortunately, they did fail because there were other people who were in positions higher above them. And, of course, war is the principal mobilizing element of any society. It has been, always will be, probably. And it basically is an undertaking in which politicians get men in uniform to perform the unthinkable for them.
Yes, it's a situation in which men who have nothing at risk get others to risk all in their name.
And it would be much more equitable, a much fairer gameplay for those politicians who want to achieve these ends to get out there and do it themselves.
Well, you know, Churchill did that in the First World War. When he lost power, he signed up and went to the trenches. Now, I think he took I think he took like a 200-gallon brass bathtub with him, but you know. But he went and he did. Meanwhile, you got dear leader. I was wandering around over at our good friends WD40.com, that website earlier today, and I saw where dear leader's been lecturing about how he's learned the lessons of Vietnam. And he's applying those lessons that he's learned to how he's conducting the Iraq War, Jim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Well, in his wildest dreams, or whatever. But, you know, it's still, I've often thought, and I remember in reading the book All Quiet on the Western Front, who was the old German Sergeant Himmelstab?
Uh-huh.
Who said what they ought to do instead of having us in these Bud Mausoleums, these Bud Trenches, they ought to have these leaders who think these wars are so important, they ought to be the ones who ought to get out there and slug it out. And not the poor dog face, or not the poor grunt who has to lose his life or his limb and his family, the suffering that that causes, and the bitterness, and being disfigured both physically and mentally.
Well, I want to share this with you, Jim. This is from the Cox News Service. It was published today, and I'm going to read to you straight from the article. The dateline is Washington, of course. President Bush says his leadership of the war in Iraq is informed by mistakes he believes were made in Vietnam. Quote, I remember the tactical decisions being made out of the White House during that period of time, Bush told conservative columnists. I thought it was a mistake then, and I think it's a mistake now.
He was referring to Southeast Asia?
Yes. I don't know.
I'm having a little trouble connecting the two, but nonetheless, in his mind, well, I mean, you know.
Well, see, what happens is
I don't really make a whole lot of effort to try to connect.
Well, we talked about this a little bit last night, Jim, because this came at this special meeting in the Oval Office with so-called conservative columnists, and this is also where he said he saw the third great awakening coming, which just made me want to slap myself in the head and run screaming silly around the room. But this is the follow-up to that, and he makes these statements, and it was, most of it was off the record, but it showed up on the National Review's online site. So then they follow up with somebody else. You know, it's kind of like the art of war, where Sun Tzu says one thing and then somebody else says what Sun Tzu meant. I'm sure you've read it, Jim.
I have.
Well, this is the same way. The historical references, said presidential communications expert Martha Kumar, are evidence of a president who knows his legacy is on the line. Quote, and he knows his legacy is going to be directly tied with the Iraq War, said Kumar. He is thinking of other situations that presidents have been in and how they handled them. He has already come to the conclusion he might not be appreciated now, and he'd like to put out the seeds of an idea that we talk about in our presidential history classes. That came from University of Texas government professor Bruce Buchanan. Buchanan said, it is often the case that people change their views about a president later rather than while they're in office. I mean, this is, you know, and it goes on and it compares him to Harry Truman, for the love of God, Jim. But yeah, George Bush says that he's running Iraq the way he is because he saw the mistakes that were made in Vietnam.
Well, I don't know what to say to all that.
It's okay if you scream. I mean, it makes me want to scream, Jim.
The thing I can say to that is something that's very trite, but, you know, success has 100 fathers, failure is an orphan.
Nah, in this case, the failure's no orphan. George Bush is the daddy of this failure.
Well,
But the trick is we've got to hang on to it and make him own and earn that failure. And see, I know you thought it wasn't so important, but that stupid little movie that ran earlier this week was a part of trying to distance George from his failures. And we absolutely cannot let him get any breathing room between his decisions, his failures, his legacy, and his reality.
Well, if anything, I think this particular president is going to receive what I would call an anti-legacy. And if anything else is the result, it will surprise the hell out of me, to tell you the truth. Because it doesn't look like that no matter how much spin you put on what happened between 2003 and now when we first started this business in Iraq, for example, I don't see how anybody's going to be able to write their way out of this one. If they do, it'll surprise the hell out of me. Like
well, you know, Jim, Dick Cheney was on Meet the Press with top-notch journalist Tim Russert on Sunday.
Did he do it all over again?
Yeah, and well, he didn't just say he'd do it all over again, but when the best part was when Russert played the clip of Cheney saying, you know, we'll be welcomed as liberators, Cheney looked at Russert and said, well, you gave me a choice. What was I supposed to do? But if you go back and play it again, there was no choice. He said it. I believe we'll be greeted as liberators. There was no choice, but they just lie, Jim. And Russert, you know, Russert didn't call him down on it. Russert let him get away with it.
Well, Russert has been known to give these people a pass, but any man who says what Katie said, if he was a part of any organization, and he said that he had learned nothing from this, that he would do it all over again, that person would be in any organization, no matter whether it's federal, whether it's private sector or whatever, this individual would be separated from that organization.
You're working toward fired. I think in most polite society, anybody who did what Cheney did, Jim, would be hustled off to a mental facility.
Oh, no, he's not crazy. No.
Well, I thought the repetition of activities expecting a different result was the very definition of insanity.
I don't think that basically you could do the insanity defense on this one because, I mean, you know, Dick Cheney knows right from wrong.
He just prefers wrong.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. And, you know, I don't think that he could escape behind the insanity defense. I mean, the German high command or the people who began that war back in 1939, they were very sane. They were very determined, and they knew right from wrong. They just didn't care to observe the rules of morality and humanity. They thought they could get away with something, and they didn't.
You're right.
And you know, where did they end up? Either committing suicide or at the end of the rope. But I don't know. Who am I? I'm just throwing out some ideas here, and I just make it special.
I appreciate it, Jim. Have yourself a great night, all right?
Say that. It's just absolutely mind-blowing.
I know. Take care. Absolutely mind-blowing. Truer words have not been spoken. Oh, and by the way, lest I let this piece of breaking news slide on by, pop the champagne. Dadgummit. Get out the ho-hos and the Twinkies. Yeah, thank you, Agnes. I mean, get out the good beer. We've killed number two in Al-Qaeda. Again. for the 52nd time. Yep, Lord, yep. Iraq's interior ministry has said its forces have killed a senior figure of the al-Qaeda militant group in Baghdad. The ministry described the slain militant, Abu Jafar al-Libi, as the number two leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, behind Abu Ayyub al-Masri, who succeeded Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, killed by U.S. forces this year. Oh, my God. Okay. I will call you number two.
And three. And four.
Well, of course we killed number two. It's because he was promoted from being number three. Before that, he was number four. Now there's a new number two to kill. But we got number two. It's that number one we've got problems with. Stop it, Agnes.
I didn't say anything.
No, I didn't want that. Well, you know, I'm constantly, you know... No, not constantly accused, but you know, every now and then I get one of those stupid little meals. Why won't you tell the happy news in Iraq? Well, there's the happy news. We killed al-Qaeda's number two. Never mind the fact that we are up to our necks in number two in Iraq. Oh, Lord God. What am I... Are we... Is there anybody in the world that reads these news stories with a straight face anymore? You know, and meanwhile, what's his name? Joe Scarborough is mad at John Stewart.
What?
Oh, yeah. Joe Scarborough is mad at John Stewart because he says he's creating a generation of political cynics. No, he's not. George Bush is creating a generation of political cynics. Tom Tancredo is creating a generation of political cynics. Conrad, damn you firefighters, Burns is creating a generation of political cynics. Felix Makaka Allen is creating that generation of political cynics. An entire Republican Congress that would screw up a one-car funeral. An entire Republican Congress capable of screwing up a one-car funeral is creating a generation of political cynics. Did you catch the John Stewart thing about question marks? If you haven't, I mean, I don't know if that came. I think it came from Alternet. Go see the John Stewart thing about question marks. If you, I mean, you'll probably need a really good laugh after a program like this. At some point in your day, watch it because it's 100% true and it's 100% funny. Number two's name was Libby. You know, if it says Libby on the mullah, no, stop it, Bob. Shame on you.
All I want to know is, did it involve a bear in a cage?
No. No, leave that alone, dear. Don't touch. And finally, just in case, I don't want you to leave thinking things are okay, because they're not. Remember how we started off with the war, going to war in Iraq with a bunch of made up crap? You know, they've got yellow cake and uranium in Niger, yellow cake, right? Remember that?
Chocolate frosting,
buttercream. UN inspectors investigating Iran's nuclear program angrily complained to the Bush administration and to a Republican congressman yesterday about a recent House committee report on Iran's capabilities, calling parts of the document, quote, outrageous and dishonest. That's official diplomatic speak for bunch of damn lies. And offering evidence to refute its central claims. Officials of the United Nations International Atomic Energy Agency said in a letter that the report contained, quote, some erroneous, misleading, and unsubstantiated statements. Again, diplomatic speak for damn lies. The letter, signed by a senior director at the agency, was addressed to Representative Peter Hoekstra, Mitch, again, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, which issued the report. Yeah, he's the liar, in other words. That's fancy Washington Post language for Peter Hoekstra is the liar. Well, what it turns out is that among the committee's assertion is that Iran is producing, pay attention to this because this really, really, really does matter. Among the committee's assertions is that Iran is producing weapons-grade uranium at its facility in the town of Natanz. The IAEA called that incorrect. Diplomatic speak for everybody say it, damn lie. Noting that weapons-grade uranium, this is science here, okay, so we got to get this right. The IAEA called that incorrect, noting that weapons-grade uranium is enriched to a level of 90% or more. That's how it gets to be enriched uranium. It's like homogenized milk, okay? You got to homogenize it before you can call it homogenized. It's got to be 90% before you can call it enriched uranium, okay? Unfortunately, the IAEA notes, and by the way, this is the International Atomic Energy Agency, the same people who were right about Iraq and their non-nuclear proliferation, that the Bush administration, a bunch of damn liars. We're telling you the truth. Yeah, that's us. You can trust us. Yeah, that's the ticket. The IAEA knows for a fact that Iran has enriched uranium all the way up to 3.5%. Math? That would mean that they're 86.5% of the way not done. They're 86.5% of enriched uranium away from even starting to build a bomb. A bomb. This is how it happens. This is how you wind up with a war in Iraq. Because you know what? This story, I promise you, did not appear on any right-wing radio today. It probably didn't make much in the way of the top of the hour news, and CNN was probably far more concerned with that guy in Montreal who killed people yesterday, and Fox was concerned with slurring Hillary or John Kerry or something, just swift boating somebody. That's what Fox does. So you didn't find out anywhere else that 90%, 3.5%, 86.5% to, third down, 86.5% to go. It didn't make it. So this, at least when the run-up comes, when the real stupid warmongering starts, you can go, hey, we did the math. They're lying to us again. And that's it for tonight. And I thank you so very much for joining Agnes and me, my lovely, darling, talented wife who produces this program. Agnes. Brian Reznor announces. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. He's in Sydney, Australia. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Our streaming partner is Shelby LaPrey, for whom we have much appreciation, at radiopower.org. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and all the archives of the Head On Radio Network programs. Every one of these programs happens because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And they support the growth of this network, and they support the salvation of the American dream. And always, always, always. RMR. It's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.